Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Online. It's been a couple weeks since I've been around, been out traveling the world, but it's good to be back. Today we got a great panel tonight. I'm really excited about. We have joining us for the first time is Rabbi Yehuda Levy.
Hi, how are you?
Also joining us is a longtime member of the Online panel, Rob Sasso.
Hey, Alec. Great to be back with you.
And contributor to Lone Conservative, also running the Halsey News Network, Stephanie McWilliams.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me on. Looking forward to chatting with everyone.
About this panel, let's jump straight into it. Tonight we're talking, first off, Sessions. Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump, the old throwdown this week. What's going on here? This is just kind of Trump going out and attacking Sessions. What are your thoughts on this, Stephanie?
My thoughts on this are I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist about this. I feel like
Steph, I think your microphone's freaking out a little bit.
Well, what the
That's what happens when you use the bad pair of headphones?
Can you find my hopefully as soon as it starts. Can you hear me any better if I just
Yeah, that sounds fine. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So my thoughts on Sessions. I feel like Trump and Sessions have a little more contact on this issue than we probably think they do. I mean, that's just kind of the vibe I get. It's just, it was very blunt in the way that Trump went after him publicly. I mean, I know Trump's no stranger to going after people publicly, but it was kind of very sudden and almost too obvious. And maybe that's a bit conspiratorial or a bit wishful thinking, but I feel like I'm going to wait and see before I really say, Trump, what are you doing? Or Sessions, what are you doing? I'm not convinced they're not kind of working together in some way.
This is definitely a personal loyalty game with Trump. I think what he's doing is he's removing people who are talking policy, and he's really going to people who are being loyal to him. That's what you can see with the Anthony Scaramucci hire. He definitely wants people who are going to punch back for him, and they're not really going to push anything important. I really think it's sad what he's doing to Jeff Sessions, because Jeff Sessions was the first senator to endorse him, and he's kind of the one who's been pushing the wall and immigration policy the most for Trump, but I think he's really messing with his friend here. I think not only is Sessions a real strong conservative in the administration, he's also a very nice person for the Trump side of the conversation as well. And I think kicking him out will set a dangerous precedent for the rest of the cabinet and for the rest of the presidency, that Trump's really just looking for people who aren't going to espouse good policy but are just going to kowtow to whatever Trump wants to see on Fox News every night.
My Get turn. Some of that to that, Rabbi.
All right. So I sort of take a Ben Shapiro method on this, which is basically that, as you said, Rob, it's basically a personal loyalty thing. And Trump sort of feels beleaguered, not because he did anything wrong. We see no evidence to that. It's basically the point here that he feels like Sessions is not giving him as much of backing as he thinks that he's supposed to do. For some reason, Trump is under the opinion here, or under the impression, that the Attorney General's job is to defend him, and basically a policeman against all the nefarious forces of the media, if you would want to refer to them as that. So in my opinion, I disagree with you, Steph. I do think that this is real. I don't think this is made up. I think, unfortunately, as you said, Rob, this is he should be having the most personal loyalty to Trump, because to Sessions, because Sessions was the first to jump on his campaign, first to really catapult him up. It was the first major backing from someone as political as Sessions, and you're going to see a blowback if he does get rid of Sessions. Now, will he have the guts to do so? I'm not sure he will. We see that he's sort of trying to force him to make life miserable for him so that he moves out on his own. I don't really see that Sessions is going to do that. Also, we have to take into account that a lot of the base of Trump supporters love Sessions, and if he gets rid of Sessions, this is a big deal for them. Will we finally see that the Trump base sort of splits with Trump if he gets rid of Sessions? Time will tell.
I think what you said there is really key, because Lindsey Graham stated, he was very clear. He said if Trump fires Sessions, or Sessions is forced out in any way, he's not going to get another AG. He's going to have to deal with Rob Rosenstein as acting AG for the next year, because Trump knows that now the Senate is going to go after him, and now the Senate is playing very smart. They're going to stand their ground here. They're going to support Jeff Sessions, because Sessions not only is a good policy guy for the GOP, he's a lot of friends still in the Senate. I'm pretty sure every single senator in the Senate loves him, and I think they really respected that Trump elevated him to the executive branch. And I think going forward, Trump's really going to have to pick his battles, because when Breitbart and Tucker Carlson are kind of saying, dude, you're going a little too far, he should probably stop.
I think what it is Trump has he's got a problem with loyalty, and that he thinks he's not getting enough of it. We saw this with Comey when the whole firing business went down and the memos were leaked, and Trump was kind of pushing Comey just a little bit, seeing how far Comey would be willing to go in regards to being loyal to Trump. And I think Trump is feeling a little bit betrayed by Sessions for not reining in Mueller a little more than he hasn't.
Which, if that is the case, I actually completely agree with you guys. Assuming that is the case, I feel like going after Mueller is a mistake, because if there's nothing to this Russia story, so far we haven't seen very much of any substance. I'm not sure how it's productive to try and make yourself seem guilty by going after the person looking at you. I think he could just be quiet. And on this issue, I don't care what he tweets about with like stupid comments and things like that, but I think maybe on this issue, it might be better just keep quiet, let the chips fall where they may. And I don't think he's going to have a problem, assuming that the Russia story comes up with the same, you know, evidence we've seen. Nothing.
Yeah, I think he's digging his own grave politically. I think when you're going to fire someone who is going to find nothing, Trump knows he's not guilty. If Mueller's going to find nothing, just let him find nothing.
Because if
Mueller's just sitting around for 4 years looking at nothing, Trump could say, oh, someone's complaining about the Russia. Well, Mueller's looking at it and nothing's going on right now. It's kind of a win-win for Trump, where he kind of can assuage the Democrats and say, oh, we're looking at this. And he can go to the right and say, listen, Democrats want to put up with this hoax for the next 4 years. Let them. They'll look like fools when Mueller finds nothing. So I think Trump's just really shooting himself in the foot by going out and doing this. I think it's a very unnecessary act to go after Sessions.
I think there's also something here, and that's important, not to switch topics too much, but I think over here that there seems to be a disconnect between Trump's vision of what the presidency is for and what his supporters hope that Trump will do with his presidency. So far, the actions that have been coming out of this presidency have been, for the most part, great. And I know people always want to say, oh, at least it's not Hillary, at least it's not, you know, another Democrat, where we're getting some actual good policy, and or at least the potential for good policy. But, you know, we have been getting some really good stuff. I mean, mostly on regulation and on having Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. But I think the point here is that Sessions basically represents the people that want policy in the Trump administration, right? And you're seeing Trump seems to think that the presidency is more about a loyalty game, as we mentioned earlier, and it's mostly about him looking the best. He wants, I can't speak for him, but the way I see it is that I think that he dreams of a day where America all thinks he is the greatest person that ever lived. And he cannot take the fact that the Democrats, no matter what, will never ever see that. Ever. They will fight him to the bitter end. He could be doing the most democratic policy. He can go even farther to the left than Obama was, and still the Democrats will hate him. And that's just the policy game, and it's politics, and we understand that. But he seems to be having a hard time with understanding it, which is why he goes after the media so much, why he's so obsessed with them. So I think this signifies something that's really troubling in the Trump administration, is if he does get rid of Sessions. And we see now that that Spicer is gone. Spicer is also someone who wanted policy. If the policy people in the Trump administration start leaving because they say, why in the world would I want to work for such a boss who, if I do something good for the policy, good for the country, then I'm going to get ousted the second it negates Trump's image of himself and the image that he wants the country to view him as, right? So then what are we going to have left from the presidency? What are we going to even have? We're just going to have a celebrity figure. Might as well get Kid Rock into the Senate and get everybody else, you know, get whichever actor wants to be in the presidency. If the presidency is basically going to be a PR office for the United States, but not do any policy, so then where's this country going?
Definitely. I think just to cap off what everyone's been saying, I think a good way to sum it up is that Trump is basically towing the line of just kind of being a celebrity head and just being a president. And I think the problem is when you're playing this game, will he or won't he fire Sessions? I think he doesn't understand that there's a lot of ramifications to that. It's not just, oh, you're just messing with people. It's actually, there's a lot of policy at stake and there's a lot of gamesmanship that he's messing with. And I don't think he understands that fully because he's kind of running the presidency like he ran his business, which was a private family business where loyalty is kind of paramount over the ideas you bring. And I think government's completely opposite. It's loyalty is not important. It's the policies you bring. And I think Trump needs to learn. I mean, he's learning a lot of things. I think he's toned himself down a little bit compared to the campaign, but he hasn't really learned how to maneuver the office as well. And I think this not making excuses for him, it kind of comes with the office, especially when he's never held any form of public office, but he does need to shape up because he is definitely damaging his presidency at this point when he's doing this kind of stuff and not promulgating policy.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps us up for our first topic tonight. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next one. This one's a little bit crazier, a little bit weirder. Trump went on a little bit of a tirade, saying no more trans people in the military. What set him off on this? Who knows? Maybe something about some recently released from prison trans traitors. Who knows? Steph, we're gonna go back to you again. How are you feeling about transgender individuals in the military?
Well, what I said about it, and I think a lot of people generally agree with me, is that I wish that it didn't have to be this way. I wish that we could just still look at people on an individual basis. And if there are, you know, a small smattering of people who have transitioned already, who are capable of serving, that they could do so. And it could be on a case by case basis. However, I think that the reason that it has to be this way is not because of Republicans or evil white Christian conservatives or whatever. I think it's because of the progressives and their need to push a radical LGBT agenda into absolutely everything, that at this point I can see why they might just be like, you know what, we're washing our hands of lawsuits, discrimination, nonsense, and just saying, none of you. Sorry, I don't care that there's a few of you. And I do think that's unfortunate because I do believe there are probably at least, you know, a small number of those soldiers. And obviously I would commend anybody who has served their country. I don't mean this to be disrespectful to people who have served, who are actively serving. I think we'd all would agree with that. But overall, I think it's not a place for social justice experimentation. I think there's one question on this. Does it make the military better or does it make the military worse? Right now, I think it makes the military worse. I kind of wish that we could just, you know, allow for the small minority that might not fit that criteria, but it is what it is. And I think that we'll see progress when the left realizes who's really to blame for this ban, if it even happens. I mean, it is really just a tweet right now, so who knows what anyone's actually seen.
This is definitely Trump, once again, like with the James Comey firing, just poisoning the well of good policy with just spouting off. He shoots from the hip. I think one thing that could have happened that would be better would be Trump would have let Mattis handle this or even some low-level bureaucrat at the DOD. Because I think the problem is that, yes, obviously this is going to be a political issue whether transgender people can serve, but I don't think that's really the question here. I think it's whether Trump handled it correctly, and I don't think he did, because not only is the DOD not ready to speak on it, their policy on their website is still the Obama policy. And I think just going quickly to this issue, I think when it comes to these people serving in the military, I think it's hard to just generalize because I don't like generalizing groups, but I think one thing you could do is just make them pass simple tests. Are they mentally capable? Do they pose a significant threat to group cohesiveness? If they can pass the normal tests that anyone else can, I don't see why not. I'm against paying for their gender reassignment surgeries. I think that we shouldn't be paying for that. But if transgender people are more than willing and more than able to serve in the Army, I don't see why not. But if there's going to be other factors that dissuade them from doing that, whether that be cohesiveness or just any mental issues, I don't think they should serve. But I mean, I think Trump at the end of the day kind of shot himself in the foot here, making kind of a non-story into the headline of the day.
Well, I couldn't agree more with both of you. And I want to add my two cents into this, is that I think historically the military has always been an institution that chooses who they feel is, you know, is proper and right for them, who is the right fit for them, someone who can, you know, who's actually ready to be able in the shortest amount of time to go through training and to get out into the field. Now, thank goodness we're not, you know, constantly fighting battles on many fronts, but there's definitely active war zones where the military has been sent into. And depending on their specialty, for example, like the Navy SEALs, et cetera, where you would have situations that people need to go to be ready, you know, constantly being trained and ready to go into battle at a moment's notice. If I would apply to the military, I don't think they would accept me. I'm just not in shape enough. And I don't think it has anything to do with my mental capacity. It might be. I would hope, and I would sincerely hope that would not be the reason why they would turn me away. Or they may find some other capacity for me that wouldn't involve me, you know, fighting on the battlefield. I think the same thing can be true for trans people. Some people are good at certain jobs, and I guarantee if there was a trans person that was an expert in a certain field and the military felt that person can add to their, you know, to their operations in a way that another person couldn't, that they'd be taking that person. So again, it goes back to what you said, Robert, about how you're going to have this whole thing where, you know, where it's basically Trump throwing out in a tweet what could be a really smart policy, and just throwing it out. I guarantee you, had the Army just updated their website and not said a thing about it, and just would have taken down what the Obama regulation had about trans people, nobody would have said boo. It would have taken months for the New York Times or some, you know, reporter looking for something to find, you know, to find the fact that the Army changed their policy or even changed their website before someone would make us think about it. And then the politicians can handle it as they do best. They would basically say something, you know, noncommittal, and nobody would think more of it. But the fact that Trump had to throw it out as a tweet sort of brings it up into a national issue. And that's the same issue that we've all been discussing, that Trump seems to try to create distractions. And I agree with Ben Shapiro again on this, that Trump was trying to throw this in as a distraction to get away from the Jeff Sessions stuff. And it's not going to work because 2 minutes later, he's back tweeting about Jeff Sessions.
Well, you hit on it just right. I think what people don't realize, or maybe people even do realize, which is just as bad, is that the two topics we talked about, we really didn't source these out besides the 6 tweets that Trump tweeted out. And I think that's the main problem. You can't really discuss what you want to do well in 140 characters. I mean, he scared most people after the first tweet when he had the dot, dot, dot after he said he was talking to the military. I mean, people thought we were about to head into nuclear war with North Korea or something, and I don't think they should have been justified in what they were thinking. But anyways, I mean, Trump really needs to calm down. I mean, there's nothing wrong with him going on TV. He's really good on the teleprompter, and he's really good in front of his crowds. He can go out there and make these speeches instead of tweeting. I know he loves to use Twitter, but I think that if he's going to say these things, he should at least be more attentive to what he's doing when he says them. And I think that when he goes to these crowds, it really helps him with his base. It really helps him with the right in general, because I think the right in general is very favorable when they see Trump going out there and talking against the media and talking against the Democrats, because I think it really hits home after 8 years of Obama. And I think that using the Twitter just kind of gives the Democrats a lot more ammo than they need. And I think moving forward, Anthony Scaramucci, I don't think he's going to be too critical on Trump enough, but if he were to do anything as comms director, it would be tell Trump to calm down with the Twitter, because I think these two issues we talked about should not have been major issues at all, if anything, because he's just spouting off because Trump wants either retweets or he wants to distract.
My biggest issue with the tweeting was that this clarification was not made, and as far as I know, it still really wasn't made, of whether or not this affects active duty military. I feel like that was a glaring omission. No matter how few of these people are in the military, I've seen a study at UCLA in 2014 that said 15,500, but then the DoD was saying around 6,000, regardless, I feel that not clarifying the status of at least several thousand people on Twitter was a little bit, that's my one real criticism of the Twitter thing. I think that was a glaring omission. And I mean, these people are still ultimately, you know, in the military and deserve a little bit of respect in that sense, for sure.
Now let's remember that this is still just, you know, Trump tweeting.
Yes.
And not any real policy just yet. So,
well, yeah, I'm not saying taking them out. I just think that it's kind of, I can't even really blame people for probably being a little worried about it, right? Because if you just see that tweet and you see nothing else, you're like, okay, am I going to still be in the military? Am I going to be kicked out? Like, I think that's a pretty legitimate fear, unlike the assuming we're going to go to war with North Korea or whatever, when you see that threaded dot, dot, dot on the Trump tweet.
It really kind of depends on how you view transgenderism. And that, I know it's a touchy subject and we're kind of dancing the line here, but I'm not afraid to come out and say it. I believe transgenderism is a mental illness. I mean, it's been classified as gender dysphoria before. It's had several different terms associated with it. And forgive me if I'm stumbling a bit. I've been up for like 36 hours. jet lag's the killer. And when you think about the United States military, how they train, how the military operates, everything is about unit cohesion. Everything is about working with your team, with your squad, with your platoon as a whole. They basically take you to your absolutely bare minimum and rebuild you up with this entire mindset of you are part of a group, you are not an individual. And this whole transgenderism thing, this whole don't ask, don't tell, even maybe an argument could be made for this, really take, like, when you're in the middle of a firefight, no one's going to be worried about when your gender reassignment surgery might happen. Like, that is the last thing they want to be on people's minds. It has no place in the military at all. In this way, I agree with Trump and his opinions on this. I don't agree with the way that he isn't really carrying out any kind of policy.
I think it's the major problem, because when Trump does this stuff, he's pissing off his own cabinet members. I mean, we talk about Sessions getting mad. Mattis was on vacation when this happened, so he had no idea this was going down. And just to touch on it quickly, Lisa Murkowski didn't vote for the skinny repeal on Obamacare, and he threatened over Ryan Zinke's head to re-regulate Alaskan energy resources. So now he's attacking his interior secretary, his attorney general, and his DOD head. And Rex Tillerson's a little upset over at State. Heard he might be fired or on the way out soon. I mean, Trump is really shooting himself in the foot here with his allies. I mean, there's times when you go off to the Democrats and Chuck Schumer and the media and the New York Times and stuff like that. But when you're getting these people angry, I'm circling back to it again. I mean, it's really disturbing, because if Trump is going to do this, he's basically sinking his own ship. And I think that any Trump supporter should know that 3.5 years left in his term, he's going to need allies, and people are not going to want to work for him if they know this is the treatment they're going to get. And I think it goes more than Twitter. It goes more to he needs to be able to run this government in a competent form. And I don't think that right now he's doing it. I think he's acting out a little bit, and I think he definitely needs to rein himself in.
100%. Again, this goes back to what we said before about Trump's vision of what he thinks the presidency is versus what us, his fans, I don't know if we can all classify as his fans, but those who want his presidency to be, you know, to be a success. And in that way, we're all his fans. We're all rooting for him to have a successful presidency. If that's all we can get out from him, then he needs to have the allies, exactly as you said, Rob. We need people to want to work for him, and he needs to start having people's backs. He seems to think this is a reality TV show, like his entire career on TV was when he was in the limelight. And it can't be this way. It's not scripted. It can't be scripted. He needs to be truthful. It needs to be out in the open. And with that, I agree with you on it. And to go back to the point that that Alec made before about troop readiness, you know, even to say don't ask, don't tell, I mean, that was a policy that was instituted about sexual orientation. I can understand there's no technical mental issue, you know, as far as we know, about just the way you feel about another person. That's fine. You can feel any feelings you want to have, about another person. But to have a mental issue where you know, where it can affect the way for you to act in the field. That's a huge difference. But I go back to what I said before, which is that if someone does have a skill set that the military would find valuable, I guarantee that they would still be using that person. And there are many wonderful trans people out there that deal with this horrible issue. And, you know, and especially if someone chooses to use their skill set for whatever it's worth to serve our country, there's nothing greater, and they deserve our utmost respect.
All right. And I think that about wraps up our discussion on that. Really enjoyed that, guys. Since we have the Honorable Rabbi with us this week, we're going to talk a little bit more about Israel, specifically some of the situation happening in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. Rabbi, why don't you fill us in a little bit?
All right. So, you know, just for those who don't know, I do live in Jerusalem right now. It is about, let's see the exact time. It is 4:26 a.m. I got up special for this. And the reason why I did so is because I believe in it's very important to spread a conservative message, something my wife and I believe in very strongly, and that therefore we're willing to get up at all hours of the night. I live right on the border with our Arab neighbors, and some of them are actually really nice and friendly and helpful, and we use them, we get along great, and those are the Israeli Arabs. But there are unfortunately those who would like to follow the main party line, sort of like Democrats, but a little bit more violent. And there's no reasoning with them. This is a holy war to them. And, you know, unfortunately, they want to take this to levels, you know, unprecedented. They just keep on wanting to, you know, rock the boat. People that live here in Jerusalem who have their lives here, they just want to live a normal life without having to worry about any terrorist attacks. Unfortunately, in the last 2 years alone, there have been 3 terrorist attacks right outside my window, which is right over there. I've actually witnessed one of them. I was right there when it happened. It's a scary thing. This is not something that you hear about it in the news and you're like, okay. And for sure, if you're reading the mainstream media where they just say something vague like Palestinians were shot by Israeli police, you don't understand the terror of standing on the train station and a guy coming out, pulling out a knife and start chasing somebody down. And within 2 feet of you, someone pulls out a gun and starts shooting the terrorists, which is, it's a scary sight, diving on the ground. It's like almost like a war zone, and it's a scary, scary thing. You know, nobody should ever have to go through that. And I understand there are people that think that the Palestinians have injustice done to them. Still, let's sit down, let's have a political discussion, and let's discuss this over the table. Let's not take matters into our own hands. But apparently, that doesn't seem to be the prevailing thought. People do want to take this into their own hands, and especially those who espouse that this is a religious war. So to the topic on point, we all know, about a week or so, there was a terrorist attack on the Temple Mount, which is the holiest site in Judaism. I just want to clarify that. Some people think that the Kotel is the holiest site in Judaism. That is incorrect. The reason why most mainstream Jews only pray at the Kotel is because there are certain rabbis that hold that you cannot go onto the actual Temple Mount due to purity issues. There are those who disagree. It's a topic, a long topic. We're not going to enter that here. But the Temple Mount is the holiest site in Judaism. It's been holy. It's actually the first religion that claimed that site as its holy site. You can go look through the historical records if you want more information on that. There was a terrorist attack. The Arabs who, to them, Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is off to the side. That's the, for those who've ever been to Israel, that's the silver dome on the right when you're standing by the Kotel Plaza, not the gold dome in the center. The gold dome in the center is known as the Dome of the Rock. Al-Aqsa, and that is where they hid some guns, and they took them out and came out and shot 2 Israeli Jews policemen, and a third, which they killed 2 Jews policemen, and they injured a third, and that's terrible. You know, it's a terrible act and of violence, and you would think that they would all condemn it, but of course Israel is the one who condemns it, and the Palestinian Authority and Hamas and all these other terrorist groups are celebrating it and handing out candies, and that was terrible. So what does Israel do? They install metal detectors, which is incredible considering that they didn't have that all this time. But they went out and they installed metal detectors and other security apparatus like any other place which deals with hundreds of people coming in at for prayers. That's a big thing. They should have that there, and they did install that. But instead of the Arabs being happy about it and the Palestinians being happy about this, they seem, and I'm talking about the ones that are politicizing this, not the ones who actually want to live in peace. We recognize them, and we're thankful for those who do want to live that way. However, there are those that are very into politicizing this, especially the APA and Hamas, and they made a whole demonstration about how dare you take away our freedom, and the Jews are taking Al-Aqsa again. And this is the thing that they've been saying since 1929. We can go back even farther back in history, and they've been saying this. When the Jews would do anything near the Temple Mount, they would automatically say, oh, Jews want to destroy Al-Aqsa. That's not the case. We just want to be able to pray by the Kotel. Some of us want to pray on the Temple Mount, which should not be an issue, but the Waqf thinks that it is an issue, and therefore they will arrest anybody. I have plenty of friends who've been arrested just by removing their lips on the Temple Mount. If they think that you're praying, they'll arrest you. So they made demonstrations the whole week, and at the end of the week, on last Friday night, there was a terrible terrorist attack where a Palestinian, a 19-year-old, went into a house in Chalamish and murdered a family that was celebrating the birth of a grandson. They murdered the parents and a grandparent. It was absolutely unspeakable horror. Terrible, terrible, terrible what happened over there. And again, did the PA and Hamas come out and say that was a terrible act that was taken too far? No. And to bring context into this, I know this is a little bit more of a rant than what we normally have, but can you imagine when Steve Scalise was shot, right? And they blamed it on political rhetoric. They said, oh, you know, people saying, getting out there, and they're saying and they're saying terrible things, and now people are spurred to action. And even Bernie Sanders, who this person was a supporter of, the shooter was a supporter of Bernie Sanders, he came out and condemned the violence, right? And we on the right, not the alt-right social justice warriors that went and stormed the stage, but we all said, no, free speech, you should be allowed to say such things. We defended the Democrats' rhetoric, and of course, they went right back into violent rhetoric soon thereafter. This is the rhetoric that happens in all political debates, but over here, instead of the Palestinians and Hamas, the PA, coming out and condemning this terrible act, they celebrated it. They made this person into a hero. There's videos of the mother saying she's proud of her son. It's absolutely terrible. Now, there are those who argue, look, if this is the way people feel, how are we ever gonna have a peace conversation? Now Israel capitulated and took down the metal detectors. And instead of the PA being thankful and saying, okay, we respect the fact that you believe our holy site doesn't need your security apparatus and we'll take care of it from here, they continued to riot. Yesterday, the Kotel Plaza was shut down for its brief period of time as people who went onto the Temple Mount, not to worship, but to riot, threw stones down onto the Kotel Plaza. Thankfully nobody was injured, but they had to close the plaza for a bit, and Israel security forces had to go onto the Temple Mount. All in all, this is a terrible situation, and it goes to show, when you capitulate to those who don't want to have a civil discussion, all it does is emboldens them. And we pray for peace in Israel, both that the Palestinians and the Israelis can get along and live together, but unfortunately that doesn't seem very likely right now.
All right. Well, I think we're just about out of time. Unfortunately, we won't be able to have too much discussion on this. So I'd just like to thank the rabbi for giving us a little bit more insight as someone who lives in Jerusalem and has experienced so much. Thank you for that. So Rabbi, actually, where can we find you online?
All right, so I'm on Twitter at Rabbi Yehuda Levi. I'm going to spell that out, Y-E-H. That's Rabbi, R-A-B-B-I, Y-E-H-U-D-A-L-E-V-I. You can follow me there. I'd appreciate that. And it's Rabbi Y Levi, again, Y-L-E-V-I @gmail.com if you'd like to send me an email.
Rob, where can we find you?
Well, I'm at Twitter at Real Robert Sasso, and I'm also the host of the Campus Conservative, so definitely look out for that. And of course, I write at Lone Conservative, so check me out there.
Steph, you got to mute your mic.
Sorry. My computer was being loud, so it's trying to be helpful. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter all the time. I'm at Steph McWilliams. It's S-T-E-F and M-A-C McWilliams. You can also find my writing at HalseyNews.com as well as RightMillennial.com. And I also host the Right Millennial Show on YouTube. I go on podcasts. You'll find me quite easily, I think. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And as always, I'm your host, Alex Sears. You can find me on Twitter at SearsAL. And as always, on Lone Conservative. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Have a good one.